driving home the importance of emergency awareness on campus, a new crackdown on illegal file sharing,
they're beyond puking, they're just heaving nothing at that point,
and one reporter's tales from the crowded Orange Line bus. Terp Weekly Edition starts now.
This is Terp Weekly Edition, a look at the issues and news in and around the University of Maryland College Park. Terp Weekly Edition is produced by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Terp Weekly Edition. I'm John Wist.
And I'm Susan Friends. Sexual assaults, carjackings, and peeping Toms have been the big crime stories so far this semester. But campus police are being more proactive, pushing the new campus alert system and offering up safety tips. Just last week, they brought it all together with Emergency Awareness Week. Terp Weekly Edition's John Wist has the story.
The UMD alert system went into action last spring semester. But when I walked around campus and asked if people had signed up for the service, the overwhelming response was...
No.
No, I haven't.
Should we?
That's why University of Maryland Police created Emergency Awareness Week. The purpose? To increase the number of students signed up for the text message alert system. But Major Jay Gruber says that signing up students for the alert system is not the only goal.
The second thing we're trying to get accomplished this week is to give people some information on how to deal with emergencies. We have some brochures and pamphlets and pocket cards that give people information on how to respond to the emergencies that they're being alerted to.
Gruber says their efforts paid off. There was a large response and increased interest in the program. Students' biggest concern? That their phone inboxes will be overloaded with alerts. But Gruber says the text alerts have a specific purpose.
What a text message does from the UMD alert system is we're looking at life-threatening, dynamic situations. So things that are happening right now where you need to either seek shelter or take some sort of action to keep yourself safe.
Even still, some students are hesitant to sign up.
Basically, I feel safe. Like, I'm not the one walking around at like 3 a.m. I'm always home by like 12, 1 o'clock, so I feel safe.
I just wouldn't get it because I don't really check the alerts that they send on email. I just don't really care to hear it.
Even if I do walk home at 3 o'clock, I'm not trying to sound tough or anything, but I feel safe.
Police say they'll continue to educate students and encourage the use of UMD alerts. The recent release of Prince George's County Police semi-annual crime report is giving university officials even more reason to increase security options. That report shows that violent crime in College Park up almost 15% between 2006 and 2007 during the months of January to June. For Terp Weekly Edition, I'm John Wist in College Park. With more on the Prince George's Police report and reaction to it from the University and Town of College Park, here's Terp Weekly Edition's April Failing.
Council members hit on several options for improving policing at Tuesday's meeting, but the council still hasn't made any decisions about recommendations from a city-commissioned policing study released this summer. One recommendation suggests the council urge University of Maryland Police to expand into more off-campus areas. University Police spokesman Paul Dillon points out that campus police expanded their off-campus policing 4 years ago. He says any more increases could weaken services to the university.
We provide a tremendous amount of free police service to the city of College Park, but our primary role is to be the law enforcement agency for the University of Maryland campus.
College Park Mayor Stephen Brayman says the council is still divided on creating a College Park police force. Currently, the city is patrolled by county police and supplemented by off-duty contract officers. SGA City Council Liaison Danielle Kogut thinks a College Park police force wouldn't meet the needs of Maryland students.
Residents are more concerned with quality of life problems, and the students are more concerned with tough crime issues. But when it comes to real detective work to solve those sexual assaults and the burglaries and the robberies, a city force would not have the resources.
College Park Public Services Director Bob Ryan says the council will likely wait to consider its policing options until after next month's elections. In the meantime, he says the city is focused on improving the contract policing program. Contract officers currently provide 180 hours to the city each week. SGA liaison Danielle Kogut agrees that a stronger contract program will best serve the campus community.
A contract system with more resources completing the 180 hours would be much more effective than right now, it being controlled within the city.
City council elections will be held November 6th. As many as half the council seats may be up for election. In College Park, I'm April Failing for Terp Weekly Edition.
Students and others on campus using illegal file sharing are bracing for another hit. The university is beginning a more aggressive phase of its latest crackdown. The Diamondback reports this latest effort includes blocking the Aries and LimeWire networks and investigating DC++. The latest effort has been prompted by lawsuits filed by the Recording Industry Association of America against several students. In fact, the university has jumped from 28th to 15th on the RIAA's list of music pirating campuses. The Office of Information Technology says Aries and LimeWire make up 87% of illegal file sharing on campus.
Multitasking just got easier across campus. Improvements in wireless networks will now allow 2/3 of students living on campus to ditch their Ethernet cables. It's part of the Office of Information Technology's plan to provide wireless access to all dorms by next fall. Some dorms are still without the convenience, including two on North Campus, all but one South Campus Commons building, and most of Leonardtown.
For many students living on North Campus, the walk to Route 1 can be a long one. So, on Friday and Saturday nights, North Campus residents, most of them freshmen, pack the orange shuttle bus and head out to blow off some steam. Terp Weekly Edition's Ronaldo Cavallo recently joined with the partygoers to get an eye and earful of what it's like to make the weekend rounds.
You pick them up early, you take them to the bars, then after 12 o'clock you start bringing them home.
It's Saturday night, and these college students are heading out to release their stress from the school week. The experiences aboard the bus can be a bit strange at times. Just ask freshman Centerville resident Eric Zavaro.
Because he fell asleep on the windowsill right here, so I guess this was cutting into his face. He wakes up, his face is covered in blood. And there are girls surrounding him, and they see that his face is covered in blood, so he plays a sympathy card, and he gets all of their numbers because he was being an idiot.
A drunk co-ed got no sympathy from riders on the bus, including freshman Brett Greenspan.
I saw a girl go face first out the back door because the doors closed before she was all the way out. And they caught her ankles and she face planted on the pavement.
Greenspan says the scene on the bus after a night of hitting the bars isn't pretty.
They were beyond puking. They were just heaving nothing at that point.
After we dropped off one crowd, it was back around South Campus, up Route 1 and onto North Campus. Gary, the bus driver, works the night shift. He's on the job from 5 in the evening to 3 in the morning. He's retired, but likes the job because it keeps him busy.
The bus holds 30-something, but you can stack them from the line back standing up. And these kids want to go. If they got one friend that gets on, and they got 12 friends with them, they'll pack. You can get 50 people on this bus.
Sydney, another freshman from North Campus, says she depends on the orange bus frequently.
I use the orange bus to get to Route 1 and back to my dorm. I probably use it about like 4 times a week.
Then there are others who use the bus in the name of public safety.
I had 4 beers and 2 shots before beer pong. It's a pregame. Then I had 4 more beers during the game.
Learning the basics of Orange Bus 101, I'm Ronaldo Calvello for Terp Weekly Edition in College Park.
A break in last month's campus carjacking case. The university police say they've issued an arrest warrant for Ralph Sua. Sua is currently being held in South Carolina. University police are working to extradite him to Maryland. If convicted, Sua faces up to 120 years in prison. The carjacking took place outside Easton Hall. Police say Sua has no connection with the campus. A search continues for 4 other suspects.
Coming up, a crabby Maryland tradition, and one professor on campus is $500,000 richer. This is Terp Weekly Edition. Things were really cracking at the second annual Maryland Crab Fest last week. For hungry terrapins, the cost of chowing down on the Chesapeake's crabs remained the same as last year, $8 for 4 crabs, $14 for 8. Also on the menu, Maryland crab soup, barbecue chicken, corn on the cob, and for those still craving more, there was chocolate cake to top it off. SGA legislator Amanda Eddy.
What we're trying to do here is we're just trying to establish a new tradition called Crab Fest. It gives everybody a chance to get together, get to know other people. A really friendly atmosphere, a little bit different than some of the other kind of programs that SGA puts on.
About 1,200 students joined in on this year's Crab Fest.
Seaweed became art in doctoral student Andrea Ottenson's award-winning photo. Ottenson has won first prize in this year's Science and Engineering Visualization Challenge. The competition is sponsored by the National Science Foundation along with the journal Science. The contest, which received over 200 entries, invites researchers to submit visual depictions of their work that would intrigue, explain, and educate. Ottenson, who will receive her PhD in plant science in 2008, took the photo of Irish moss she pulled from the ocean and pressed flat.
How would you like to receive $500,000? No strings attached. That's exactly what happened to a University of Maryland geography professor. Ruth DeFries is one of 24 recipients of the so-called Genius Grant from the MacArthur Foundation. She'll receive the money over the next 5 years for her research. DeFries uses satellite imagery to study how everything from expanding cities to farming is transforming the Earth's surface. Terp Weekly Edition's Shiro Yudkoff caught up with DeFries at her office to talk about her passion for geography and how she'll be spending that prize money.
I was sitting right here in the chair where we're talking to each other right now, and my cell phone rang, and this MacArthur Award was the absolute last thing on my mind. And there was a phone call from the other end from the MacArthur Foundation with this very nice news, and I was, of course, very surprised. And I was told that I could tell one person until the news was released the following week. So I told my husband, and it was very hard not to tell my kids or anyone else. I've always just been interested in looking at landscapes and looking out windows and thinking about how people interact with their environment. When I was an undergraduate, the tools that we have now to be able to look at the land surface with satellite was only in its very beginning stages. I've also been working in India, where there are different kinds of transformations, but very dynamic in terms of growth of cities, urban areas, and how people are changing their use of resources. So different parts of the world have different types of transformations that are going on, and that's really the power of the remote sensing, is that we can look at those areas and try to understand what's going on. What is unique about this grant is that there are no strings attached, and the funds can be used in any way that the grantee thinks that it's most useful for their work and for developing the field, or even take their work in different directions. So it's absolutely no strings attached, no progress reports. So I'm thinking quite a lot, and I have a lot of thinking to do about how to best use these funds, and I'm thinking about a couple of different things. And I work a lot in developing countries, and I know how difficult it is for young scientists to have opportunities, and there's so much creativity and so much talent and such large challenges to develop sustainably, that I'm just thinking about some small way that I can make some contribution to opportunities for young developing country scientists.
DeFries obtained her bachelor's degree from Washington University and her PhD from Johns Hopkins University.
The SGA dorm stormers swept through the residence halls on campus last week in an attempt to meet their goal to register 1,000 student voters. This was their final push to register voters for the upcoming College Park election. There are no student candidates, but the SGA insists that the more students who vote, the greater their presence on the city council will be. The SGA says it is nearing its goal and hopes that all who register will make it to the polls next month.
Last week, Terp Weekly Edition's Eric Schaefer talked to the university's new Vice President for Administrative Affairs, Doug Duncan. Duncan, who took over the job in April, came to College Park after an unprecedented three-term run as Montgomery County Executive. Last year, Duncan was a contender for the Democratic nomination for governor. Then, in a flash, he was out. The man who helped rebuild Rockville and Silver Spring dropped out of the governor's race after being diagnosed with depression. But out of his personal crisis grew opportunity. The university announced Duncan's appointment in March. Terp Weekly Edition's Eric Schaefer continues his talk with Duncan on his battle with the blues.
Watching, you know, your announcement to drop out of the race.
At first, I attributed this to the stress of the campaign. But over the past couple months, it became clear to me, my wife, Barbara, our family, my closest supporters, that this was more than the usual wear and tear of the campaign trail.
You seemed pretty relieved, almost. How did you feel once it was sort of lifted off your shoulders that you weren't running for governor anymore and that you could focus on your current situation?
Well, depression is a horrible thing. I would not wish that on anyone. And if you haven't experienced it, it's sort of hard to describe, but it's a horrible feeling. It's very dark. And I was very thankful that I sort of finally realized what was happening to me and sought professional help and and was able to get the treatment that I needed. You know, we have far too many suicides in this country. Philip Merrill, you know, wonderful human being, wonderful man, committed suicide about a week before I stepped down. And it's something that we have to watch out for in others and in ourselves.
There's been very few cases, not just in regional, but in national politics, where someone has dropped out because of that type of situation.
Well, I thought about it long and hard, and I really felt that, you know, I'm convinced if I had been myself, I would be governor today. But I was not myself, and I was not going to be myself until I stopped and took some time to recover and get the medicine I need and get the treatment I need. You know, we talked some about it, and somebody suggested, well, you know, how do we tell people and you know, do we come up with some political reason? And I just said, no. I said, if I, you know, I'm not sure people believe that. Let's just tell the truth. And people said that was very courageous. To me, that wasn't the courageous part for me was realizing what was wrong with me and then admitting I couldn't deal with it myself, that I needed to seek some professional help. I needed to see a doctor. Once I made that decision, then everything sort of fell into place after that.
Have you gotten used to, or have you have to suffer through the 20, 25-minute walks that regular students have to go through every day here?
Well, I'm still getting used to the commute from Rockville and the traffic on the Beltway in 270. And the walks are something that actually I need to do a little more of.
Mr. Duncan, thank you so much.
Sure. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
So what do you do at the end of the school year with the stuff you no longer need? Much of it still usable. Chances are you just toss it in the trash. In fact, many of us buy more than we need, only to throw it out. Terp Weekly Edition's Yohang is an exchange student from Hong Kong who checked out the habits of Americans and found there is much going to waste. Here's one part of her special report.
It's our habit. When the cell phone breaks, toss it and buy a new one. When the chair loses a screw, give it up and put it with the garbage. Can't finish the food, just leave it on the tray. We hardly realize how much we waste, but the fact is, University of Maryland is producing over 77 tons of junk every week. Jennifer Chung, an exchange student from Hong Kong, says she is frustrated to see so much being wasted.
When they go to the dining hall, they will get way too much food where they can't eat everything and throw the rest away. Or they will leave the taps on when they go into the bathroom. While they're brushing their teeth, they just let the water run. Sometimes the Diamond Blank wastes quite a bit of paper since they produce so many copies. And a lot of times the newspaper aren't being taken.
Chen Che, a junior finance major from China, thinks Americans are wasting electricity.
In the computer lab, they open the computer 24-hour day. For the office, they open the lights 24 hours a day.
So why are students leaving the water tap running? A freshman international business major who wishes to stay anonymous says it's all about money.
Because I'm paying for the water, it's in my tuition.
The dining hall is where Jennifer and Chen say they observe most wastage. To look into the problem, I was with the busboys during a lunch hour. Larry, a busboy, says they need to wash more than 200 dishes per person every day.
Students waste a lot of food, cost the school a lot of money.
Assistant Food Services Director Pam Baylor also thinks students are wasting a lot.
The use of the styrofoam is a big waste, and I see a lot of students eating in the dining room with the styrofoam.
So why are students taking the styrofoam boxes?
We don't want to walk all the way back to the conveyor belt. We're being lazy.
Do you do that every time you have food in a dining hall?
Yes.
I just take the go box because it's convenient. I don't want to take no tray or nothing like that.
And why are they taking more than they need?
Well, I don't finish it because I don't eat that much.
I don't really know how you can take less.
You get so many meal points and there are people with excess, especially when it comes to the ending periods.
Probably didn't need that many, but I used a lot of napkins.
A solution to the wastage problem is recycling, but just how much do people understand it? Tune in next time to find out more. In College Park, this is Yohang Un for Tab Weekly Edition.
Coming up, a new 24-hour store to curb those Wawa cravings, and the university's club paintball team gets fired up. We'll have part three of our special report. Stay with us, this is Terp Weekly Edition.
Missing the convenience of Wawa? Well, for students on North Campus, a remedy for those late-night cravings is on the horizon. A new 24-hour snack shop could be completed by fall 2008. Dining Services plans to put the shop in the building that formerly was Denton Dining Hall, which closed in 2003.
A new music venue is coming to College Park. The new Birchmere has created a battle between two local cities for some vital funds needed for the project. Terp Weekly Edition's Eric Schaefer has more.
Vice President of Administrative Affairs Doug Duncan says the Birchmere and the venue Silver Spring wants are completely different.
I sort of described it as, you know, you want a Whole Foods grocery store, but you get a Costco instead.
The Birchmere, a more intimate venue, was intended for Silver Spring, but backed out for Live Nation, owners of the 930 Club in Washington, D.C. It's that reasoning is why the university thinks it deserves $4 million in state funding for their project. Duncan says most of the funding will be from private backers, but they need funding from the state.
Well, the project doesn't work if you don't get the state funding. And it's a huge amenity for East Campus.
But Silver Spring officials say Duncan is taking funding away from his old stomping ground, where he worked as Montgomery County Executive for 12 years. The current Montgomery County Executive, Ike Leggett, says the funds are for the location, not the venue.
The assumption at that time was that the music venue that we would have would be Birchmere, so that name was just attached to that. But it had nothing to do, per se, with Birchmere. It had to do more with economic development in Montgomery County and that particular venue. So that's not going to fly.
The Birchmere should be up and running in 2012, and Live Nation will be finished in 2010. In College Park, I'm Eric Schaefer, Terp Weekly Edition.
Minority graduation rates are lagging, a major concern for the university. Only a few weeks ago, President Moat, in his State of the Campus address, said that the six-year graduation rate for Hispanic students is 15% lower than for white and Asian students, something he called one of his few disappointments. The Diamondback reports the issue has increasing importance because the number of Hispanic students graduating from Maryland high schools is expected to triple by 2014. African-American students have lower graduation rates. The university says the problem will be a priority as it develops its 10-year strategic plan.
Zero. That's the number of scholarship players from the Maryland men's basketball team who graduated after enrolling between 1997 and 2000. Maryland ranked last in NCAA graduation rates among 321 Division I schools. The Washington Post reported Coach Gary Williams claims the number was completely false and that 3 out of the 10 players from the time period did eventually graduate. Clemson, with a 31% graduation rate, was the only other ACC program with a graduation rate under 40%.
They're out there on the firing line, taking hits and returning them when they least expect it. It's a battleground of a different sort for Maryland's club paintball team, one of more than 380 college paintball teams in the country. For the past 2 weeks, Terp Weekly Edition's Heather Bartholomew has taken us to their front lines. In the final part of her three-part series, Heather says the team is hoping to build on its past successes.
Go! Maryland's paintball team is looking towards the future. They're hoping for a field that's closer to campus. Currently, they drive over an hour away to Taneytown, Maryland to practice every week. Alexi Mollican, a sophomore cell biology and genetics major.
Hopefully at some point we'll get some kind of a practice facility on campus, some area that's not used often.
Having a field closer to home would also decrease the money players have to put in just to play. Peter Sullivan, junior biology major and captain of the paintball team, says Penn State and Drexel's paintball teams receive $25,000 to $30,000 per year to finance their teams. Sullivan says this is much greater than the $4,000 they received from the SGA this past year, which is only enough to cover league fees. Sullivan.
On the side, we have to buy our equipment. If you add up all the equipment I've ever bought for what I'm using now, it's like $1,500.
Sullivan estimates that the team spends about $7,000 on paint every year. With dues from $200 to $250 a semester, the costs can add up. He says the expenses have deterred some people from joining the team.
It's hard for us to get members because it's so expensive, but we can't get more funding unless we have more members and it's more popular. So we're kind of stuck in this little bit of a cycle, which we're trying to get out of.
The team does have some sponsors, Sullivan.
We don't get anything for free necessarily, but they give us huge discounts on everything, which helps out.
Will Latanzio, who will be a member of the team next year, says the future looks bright.
Hopefully we'll be able to win a couple college tournaments. Maybe, you know, have a few new trophies in my room or something.
With Maryland's team coming in third this year at regionals, the team's hopes are high for future success. Aw, man, I got hit. I guess I'm out. I'm Heather Bartholomew for Terp Weekly Edition in Taneytown, Maryland.
That's all for Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Susan Friends.
And I'm John Wist. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to hear more of Terp Weekly Edition, visit our website at www.twe.umd.edu.
This has been Terp Weekly Edition, produced and written by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio. Please join us next week at the same time for a look at the issues in and around the University of Maryland College Park.